First to the ongoing, difficult-to-read situation for the Crown staff detained in China. Three Australians, Jason O'Connor, Jerry Xuan and Pan Dan, are among the 18 people who've been arrested by Chinese authorities on suspicion of gambling crimes, targeting casino operators that seek to entice wealthy citizens overseas to gamble. And of course, Australia does offer special visas to people who are termed high rollers, so maybe this has played a role. The gambling sector in Hong Kong and Macau is said to be very rattled. The Financial Times is reporting that in the wake of the arrests, some companies have been withdrawing key staff and conducting risk checks. But how can you calculate the risks? What lies behind the arrests? Well, Dr. Jeff Raby was Australia's ambassador to China when Rio Tinto's chief representative in China, Stern Hu, an Australian citizen, was arrested there 7 years ago. And while the exact circumstances are different, he can provide important insights into the challenges that Crown and the families will now be facing. Welcome, Jeff Raby.
Thank you, Gerard.
How complex is this for consular staff and Crown?
Oh, it's a huge headache. We have a good consular agreement between Australia and China that sets out a minimal set of things that must be done, such as contacting the embassy within 4 days when an Australian is arrested. But after that, there's not a lot, and it's basically playing it by ear. And the Chinese, as we know, have a very opaque system, and they dribble information out, sometimes leak information as well, but very difficult to find out exactly where the case is in the system until there's a formal charge and it goes to the courts.
And are there limits on how long they can keep them without charging them?
Under the consular agreement, it's got to be within 34, 35 days.
Right.
But I think there's some room for fudging that. But the Chinese are generally okay in terms of following the letter of the agreement, but not anything more.
So if charges are laid, is there the opportunity for Crown to contest them?
Well, the individuals will be able to, at some point, defend themselves when it goes to the courts.
And they will have advocates for them, and would it be an open court?
They will have lawyers, access to lawyers. It can be quite a long time between incarceration and appearing in the court, because the Chinese side will very carefully collect all the evidence it can and build the case before actually going to the court. And whether it's open or not really will depend on the court. In the case of Stern Hu, there are two elements to the charges. One was bribery and one was
espionage.
Revealing state secrets, yep. The bribery element of the case was open, but the state secrets espionage part was closed. I would think that in this particular case, it would be an open trial.
Okay, and so because, you know, there's been some very vivid reporting here, and of course you wrote this week in the Financial Review about the drama that the Stern Hu arrest caused you at the embassy, and wives here are saying that they don't know all what their husbands are going through already, like what might be the state of the conditions in which they're held.
Oh, I think the conditions will be quite reasonable. Again, the Chinese will be very aware of the international attention being paid to this case. But they will be fairly basic but reasonable. But the problem is limited access to lawyers or to consular officials. And that then creates a great sense of anxiety understandably, on the behalf of families.
Mm. Now, the way the arrests were organised, Jeff, I mean, what does that tell us?
Well, it's a very deliberate approach. The big number itself is interesting. The fact that they seem to have waited for a senior Crown official to...
That's Jason O'Connor.
Jason O'Connor, to be in the country to make the arrest. This clearly is, I think, a well thought through and planned execution to cast the net fairly wide and amongst the Crown people.
Could you speculate on who would have agreed to this? I mean, how high up the tree would you have to get authority for such moves?
It could be done at the level of the Ministry of Public Security, and possibly you'd expect there would have been a discussion with the minister. But I suspect because of the high-profile international dimension of this, this would have gone higher than that, possibly even to President Xi himself.
Truly, I see.
Yeah, well, it's a very hierarchical system here, of course.
Now, there was also word this week that Premier Li Keqiang had just visited Macau, which has suffered amazingly since the Chinese brought in their anti-gambling, foreign gambling legislation or regulations. And that, do you see any sort of link between Premier Li Keqiang's visit to Macau and these arrests?
Well, I don't. I think the issue of Macau and how Macau's travelling is of concern in and of itself to Beijing. The economy is quite depressed at present.
Well, allegedly it lost a third of its revenue when in 2014 when President Xi brought down these restrictions about gambling abroad.
Yes, no, exactly. So, there could be a tie-up. I doubt it. I think the system's not quite that well coordinated and wired up for that to be the case. And I think what we're dealing with here is a bigger issue of demonstrating that the law applies equally to Chinese and foreign citizens and so on.
Yes. I mean, could there have been a possible lapse on Crown's part, for instance, in monitoring the local laws? That's what some people are overtly asking in newspapers. And we actually have quite an interesting piece by a man called Alistair Nicholas, who used to advise people in China, foreign governments, on government relations. And he said he's constantly amazed at the naivety of businesses to read China's political tea leaves. And you'll often be told everyone does it, or the government doesn't really enforce the law and Western companies are concerned, which is true until they decide to enforce the law.
Exactly. I mean, the comment is exactly right. The naivety of foreign companies working in China is extraordinary. And that's right. When you're operating in China, you have to operate on the basis that at any time, if you have not followed the law scrupulously, you're vulnerable. Now, in this case, we just don't know what the facts are yet. But it is a question, to my mind, why Crown and why not any of the other operators?
Well, the Koreans, there was a big arrest earlier this year of a group of Koreans who I think of subsequent, who were also, in effect, encouraging high-roller Chinese to gamble in Korea. Now, I think they've been charged and subsequently released, a lot of them.
Yeah, I think some might still be in detention, but yes. They're also fairly junior, I think, all Chinese citizens, not foreigners. And I think that's a big difference in this case.
So why Crown?
Well, and why didn't this Korean case send everyone a very clear signal that the government was serious about enforcing the regulations that it brought in, forbidding aggregation for betting? I don't know. And that's the big unknown. And perhaps one day we will never know why Crown and why not some other operator, if indeed there has been something done by Crown which is untoward or against the law.
I mean, Fairfax Media reported earlier this week that police seized the computers, laptops and mobile phones of the Crown employees, which I suppose would occur in an investigation. But what would the authorities be looking for?
Well, they want to collect as much evidence as they can. That would be standard practice, of course. But in doing so, of course, they collect names and information about gamblers and the practices of Crown, but it'd be absolutely normal standard procedure for police to do that, not only here but in any other country.
But I mean, they would therefore, would they not, get a lot of details about high net worth Chinese VIPs who are very strong on anonymity in the midst of this big crackdown on corruption. So it's got a bit of an extra dimension, does it not?
Absolutely. It will be a rich field of information for the authorities when they comb through all of that. Whether that's a primary purpose or not, it's really hard to say at this stage. And of course, everyone who leaves has to apply for a passport to leave. People are recorded moving in and out of the country. So the authorities are not unaware who the high rollers are, who are the people leaving, but certainly this provides evidence about their specific activities when they're outside of China.
I mean, isn't there a difficult situation, in a sense, here for our government here? It introduced this express visa for Chinese citizens for high-value visitors, and they have to put a certain amount down on the table before they're allowed in, and it is distinctly designed to foster this sort of trade, as it were. The same rights are afforded, I understand, to US citizens. Now, isn't this a form of support for a practice that China may well now be acting upon, and therefore it does have political implications?
That's one way of looking at it, Jeremy, but I think the reality is that we can set our laws for what we wish to do and do them in our own way. And if we wish to do that, we're perfectly entitled as a country to have those laws or those express visa arrangements. China has its own laws and has to deal with the application of its laws inside its own borders.
So, I mean, given clearly China's greater scrutiny of the gambling sector, for whatever reason, how worrying is it that in Sydney, for instance, Crown is building a casino designed especially for high rollers from China? I'm really asking you, what does this suggest for the near future?
Well, as far as the Crown Sydney Casino, others will make that judgment, but what is clear is that the government is determined, one, to continue with its broad anti-corruption campaign, and secondly, it's making gambling and control of gambling a central part of that campaign now. It's also interesting because much of the anti-corruption campaign, of course, is directed at party officials and government officials, but a crackdown on high net worth individuals takes the anti-corruption campaign much more into the private sphere, clearly an extension of that campaign.
And I mean, I really wouldn't mind a final reflection for you in the light of a lovely little angle that I noticed was the Financial Review provided via its correspondent Lisa Murray, that on primetime national television this week, it was the first instalment of an 8-part series on the successes of the anti-corruption campaign. So I just wonder whether we've just got to see this and understand that this is part of something quite a lot broader, however worrying that might be.
It's broader. I don't think, though, it reflects on the bilateral relationship. And there will be certain elements that are specific to Crown. But it goes to the point you were making earlier, Geraldine, about often how naive and uninformed foreign companies are when they're dealing in China, and how important it is to have informed resources on the ground and also to be scrupulous in following laws and regulations here. Because everyone is exposed and vulnerable if you don't.
Thank you very much indeed, Jeff. I really appreciate your time. And just, well, maybe we'll check in with you again when things are a bit clearer.
Sure, Geraldine. Happy to do so. Thank you.
Jeff Raby, he was our ambassador to China from 2007 to 2011. He now heads Jeff Raby and Associates in Beijing. And you'll find there's a lot of reading about this in today's weekend papers. And particularly the Sydney Morning Herald has, the Fairfax papers have a lot on issues around already our concern about some of the high rollers. And so you just wonder whether that's also the concern of the Chinese authorities. And the fact that there is no, that the Crown does not have an office in China. Not the first time I've read that, but it just is making that point in the Financial Review today. So quite a lot if you want to follow that up, and we certainly will.